When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You start the fire, down to find where you are. Hello, my name is Warrior Boswell, and this is The Measurables. Today we are joined by a friend of mine and yours, a gentleman who spent 40 years crafting the image of what American design and how we should dress, the fashion guy, then became the creative director. Talking about none other than Mr. Jim Moore. How are you?
Wow, thank you for that introduction. I don't know if I deserve that. Good to see you.
Absolutely, good to see you as
thank
well.
Thank you for having me here.
So before we get into the litany of things that I want to discuss with you, how are you? What's new?
How am I? What's new? I'm good. I'm in a kind of relaxed state right now because I'm a little bit on, I took some time off as I often do in July.
Yeah.
I've kind of been this way all my life where if everyone goes away in August, I don't want to go away. And if everybody, you know,
absolutely.
If everybody's working in July, then that's when I want to go away. You know, I've always, if I can swing it, I would be the person going to Greece in October, August, you know?
Yes,
so,
yes.
That's just kind of my thing, but I'm wrapping it up this weekend and then back to Brooklyn to
get back into
shoots.
It.
Yeah.
To get back into
but
it.
Life is good. Absolutely. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. We had a conversation prior to the cameras rolling.
Yes.
And, you kind of blessed me with some, you know, real information. And like, you know, we always have these conversations on the phone, but the fact that we're having it in person is just like elevates the importance of it.
Well, I'm super honored to be here.
Absolutely.
And to be face-to-face because it's been pre-pandemic since we've actually been in the same room.
Absolutely.
You were so gracious to come to my book signing party
and
here out in LA. And it was lovely to see you and meet your wife and, you know, have kind of a chill moment. Just really beautiful. Always be inspired by you and your incredible presence and your incredible style.
Thank you, brother.
And I like being around good people. You're good people.
Thank you very much. So like after you depart and you set off and you chart this new path, like, you know, what's the focal point in terms of like what you're going to do next? Did you have that already like laid out? Or was it like, you know what? I stopped on Friday, Monday I'm gonna take and go do this, or I'm going to take a year off, or actually I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of unfolded really naturally in a way. I mean, I have to say the minute that, you know, Condé Nast started doing this restructuring and, you know, there was a possibility that, you know, I could go more of a freelance player.
Absolutely.
You know, after being full-time for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Way in the back of my mind, listen, I could stay at GQ forever. I love that job. But in the back of my mind and in the pit of my soul, or maybe not that far down, was always this person saying, you nailed it there.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, you know.
Absolutely.
Because I had an amazing team.
Yeah.
But can I have a chapter two? And what would that be? What would that look like? So I think that was always kind of swirling around. But because, you know, the magazine business is so hectic. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, I started when I was 19 at GQ, so I was kind of born into that culture.
Absolutely.
Of like every 3.5 weeks you churn out another magazine, and you can't, you know, if your friends come to you and say like, oh, in, you know, the first week of August in 2023, we want to go to Greece, you know, there's no way I know what I'm doing next week, let alone in 2023.
Absolutely. Right.
So it annoys, you know, people that are around me that I can't just pick up and go. But the schedule has always been kind of dictated by the magazine and the celebrities we shoot and the projects. And that worked really well for me because I grew up in that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people, I've had assistants that are phenomenal assistants, but after a while they're like, I can't, this is too much of a circus.
It's too hectic.
It's too hectic. And in a way, in my mind, I felt that it was very structured, you know, because it was this kind of dance you had to do. You had these 3.5 weeks and you had to be topical. So you had to, you knew as the deadline came, you were going to be shooting closest to deadline for the most part. And then you've got to think about the next three issues, right?
Right.
So it's always this kind of like moving target. And it doesn't matter how many calendars you have in front of you, it changes every single day. Wow. I think I'm kind of built that way to start with. So it served me well. So I think the idea that, you know, now I'm going to step out of the nest and I'm going to have this kind of unstructured life.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. I would think that'd be very difficult. It'd be
like,
very difficult.
What is that going to be about? But, you know, I kind of attacked it the same way I did when I moved to New York and set my eyes on working for GQ. I said, I've got to meet with everybody. It's almost like in my mind, it was like, let's start over, right? Let's make chapter two like a new chapter. Like, I know pretty much everyone in menswear, but let me arrange coffees, lunches, you know, dinners with people I know. So I probably did well over 100 meetings with companies.
This is post GQ.
So I kind of jumped, you know, I was still under contract, but I was no longer obligated to that very hectic schedule.
Right.
I had big blocks of time. And for the first probably 4 to 5 months, that was my full-time job, just like calling up.
Reacclimating yourself to the territory.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Everything from, you know, everybody from Ralph Lauren to Amazon to like whatever it was, you know, that I needed to do to just say, hey, whether you know it or not, I'm a gun for hire, you know?
Absolutely.
And this is what I think I could do for you.
In reference to your wardrobe.
Yes.
For the most part, it's mainly dark hues. For the most
part. Yes, yes.
Is there a science or a psychology to that Einstein wardrobe? Or that's just like, you know what? I've been doing this forever.
You know Mark Anthony Green?
Mm-hmm.
Who works at GQ?
Yes.
He came in my office once. He's like, I figured it out. I was like, Mag, what have you figured out? He's like, you have to earn your wardrobe. You have to earn the uniform.
Wow.
And you earned it, and that's why you dress the way you are dressed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I believed all of what he said, but I thought it was kind of amazing. Because it is true when you're, especially if you're a fashion guy or girl like you and I, it's like you go through these phases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go through the experimental phase when you want to wear, you know,
all the colors,
all the stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you go through maybe a vintage phase, and then you go through like, let me mix this with this. And along the way, I get so inspired by photographers I would work with or actors or athletes or whatever that that kind of, all of that kind of put in a Cuisinart started to develop my own personal style.
Mm-hmm.
And what made me the happiest was when I had a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to Margiela in Paris. This was years ago when Margiela was at the head of the Maison. And I saw everybody in lab coats. And I was like, how great must that be?
Absolutely.
To be in a lab coat.
Everyone's uniform.
I love going to fast food restaurants and seeing everybody in a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not so much
right.
anymore. But right. Or like flight attendants. And I thought, that's kind of great. I never went to a private school. Obviously, my parents couldn't afford it, but I did like the idea of a uniform. And I thought to myself one day, I just think I liked the idea of like wearing black and making myself a little bit of a lab technician in a way, you know, because what we do, we're always in a laboratory, right?
Absolutely.
You're always looking at swatches for your beautiful collection. You're right. Always fitting your customers.
Mm-hmm.
You are always playing with shapes and things. That's a, mm-hmm. that's a laboratory, really.
Absolutely.
And it's not for me to look like a peacock to make someone else look great. It's for me to kind of disappear and have this simple wardrobe that's going to be comfortable,
yeah.
but suit me. And then I can make the person I'm dressing look great. And you know, it's kind of an easy thing, you know, but I still get excited about buying another black polo or, you know,
yeah.
a pair of New Balance or whatever it is.
My next question is, so Lou Wasserman, there's a documentary on him, okay. how he ran Hollywood and,
yes.
you know, pretty much took, you know, the company MCA from where it was as a management company and just made it. And his guy, who was like his consigliere in Washington, D.C., said that he had the all-seeing eye, right? Jim Nelson said that you have the eye. Hmm. What does that mean to you? What does the eye mean?
The eye is probably the ability to...
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
React quickly to creative situations, problem solving very quickly. That's the.
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's the work of work. That's the job of working for a magazine.
Because and being on those deadlines.
We'll be in an ideas meeting, and maybe we're in there for an hour and a half, and then we've decided that we're going to put LeBron James on the cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the last person that Jim is going to look to in the meeting is going to be me, and he's going to say, now, how should we dress him? You know?
Right.
So it's something instinctually that I think about that I could see him at. Obviously, it's based a little bit on how we might have shot him the year before or mm-hmm. 4 years before and kind of where we are in the, you know, in the fashion
landscape. Right.
Landscape. But I think what trips up a lot of creative people, I've actually said this before, but what trips up a lot of creative people is that they have so many ideas in their mind, and you have to just, at some point, you just have to just pick one, right?
Correct.
And you just have to say, like, I see LeBron in
correct
black leather jacket and the turtleneck or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and I think we should shoot him, you know, in a beautiful, you know, forest or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you just, I get a vision, and then I say it, and then I make sure that I stick to it.
Absolutely.
And if for some reason LeBron James won't go to Forest, or for some reason he won't wear a black turtleneck, I will still keep an essence of that idea, even if we end up in a studio. You know?
Absolutely.
So I think that the eye probably has a little bit to do with that. It also has a lot to do with training. I worked, before I even got to GQ, I worked at Paul Stewart,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty reputable mm-hmm. conservative men's store, but considered a little bit more, I don't know, more experimental than a Brooks Brothers.
Absolutely.
Especially in the late 70s. And, you know, I learned a lot of things there. I learned how to fit a glove on a man's hand. I learned how to take a fedora and place it on a man's hand and put the crease and fold down the brim. And, you know, I feel like I'm lucky because I had a lot of mentors along the way that taught me those things. And I was just curious as a cat. So I was, I had a voracious appetite for fashion magazines. And, you know, there was no internet in those days. So you really had to kind of buy them all and look through them. And, and that's kind of how I charted my course, because I wanted to be a fashion editor, but I didn't know what, I didn't really know what they did, but I knew that someone was on set to make sure that person, whether it's a guy or a girl, looked great, that worked with the photographer to make sure the light was great, that worked with the setting, that there was someone who had the eye, right? And I could, over time, looking at different magazines or books or whatever, I could see that people had different eyes and different visions. And I became, you know, a little bit self-educated on it. And then when I got to New York, I just kind of
went.
I went and I just became this giant sponge and I just kind of took it all in. But, you know, I was very lucky to have some very talented, creative, stylish people around me when I was very young.
Absolutely. So speaking of your, just your vision, I remember when Rachel Johnson reached out to me and she was like, you know, I have something I want to share with you, but you need to come see me where I am. And I was at home and I said, well, where are you? And she was at this hotel on Sunset. And she said, when you get to the lobby, just give me a call, come down. So I get to the lobby, call her naturally. She comes down. And she's like, how are you? I'm like, Rachel, like, you got me out here. Like, what do you need?
Yeah.
And she's like, would you be interested in dressing Colin Kaepernick? And like, I was just like, wow, of course. And she was like, don't say yes so quick. We need it in 48 hours. And I was like, okay. So it was that there were three suits that were made. And speaking to your eye, there was one black and white suit that had more of a tribal feel to it.
Yes.
And I remember I was calling her every 5 minutes because I wanted to be there, but it was a closed set. She was just like, well, the black suit's not going to work. What other suits do you have? And I was like, well, we can do a black suit. And she was like, all right, send that. And when I guess when it arrived, you know, you put your eyes on it and you're like, this will work.
Right.
But the question I have for you, because I wasn't there, was when he put on something that was more tribal, how did you land at the Black Panther-esque look, because it worked so perfectly just being so stripped down, and it just be about his eyes, about his natural, and then we get to the clothes. Like, how did you arrive there?
Again, that was something that happened pretty quickly. You know, I had worked with Colin, and we were up in San Francisco, and we were shooting him, right? San Francisco? Okay. I remember seeing his hair, how it had evolved and changed, and he had gone natural, and and I thought, well, that has obviously a little bit of a retro vibe to it, and it reminded me of, you know, my childhood watching movies in the 70s, and I thought that would be great, and I thought it would be very respectful to him and his causes.
Absolutely.
And Rachel is someone who I absolutely adore. She's one of my dearest friends. We have a really exciting project that we're working on. That you'll be the first to know about.
Absolutely,
but, she's someone who, you know, when you work in the magazine business, you don't, it's changed a little bit, but fashion editors don't necessarily welcome in outside stylists all the time, right?
Agree, yes.
We want their advice because they shoot, you know, obviously they know what looks best, or they worked with them, or certain designers, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Rachel and I, we just hit it off right away. And she was like, when you come down, it was a LeBron James cover, which was the first one we did with LeBron. And, you know, she's like, when we go to Cleveland, you'll see the closet that I set up for him. And like, we just hit it off like a house on fire. So every time there was someone that she was her client, that I would invite her into the shoot, and we would do it together.
That's
so
amazing.
That was really kind of a new swerve for us, you know, but because I felt that she had such great taste and such great relationships and she loved the magazine, you know, and she kind of became, you know, for lack of a better word, like a freelance, you know, she became part of the family.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'll always kick myself. She'll always kick herself, but it came, you know, with a great, you know, a surprise and a prize at the end. It was that Colin said, you know, Rachel and Jim, I really would love to be dressed by designers of color.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And let's include women in there as well.
That's amazing.
And it was like, that is so, I'm just getting goosebumps right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic. That is like, you know, it's like, why didn't we think of that? You know?
Right.
So it was a moment where we were, it was an unprecedented moment because there were a lot of designers that probably, you know, up until that point, even though I feel that we had opened our arms to, you know, every community, I felt like a lot of those designers had never seen the inside of the GQ closet.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And here were designers that I may have known about, but didn't know a lot about them. And it was a real learning experience. Colin, our conversations with Collins, who's an incredibly charismatic, sweet, obviously hyper smart, hypersensitive man on a mission, was the first person to teach me about Black Lives Matters. This is mm-hmm. back in 2017. And we proceeded with the shoot. So it was a combination of like...
All these things.
You know, like, let's dress you like this. We had to go to an undisclosed location because it was a real top secret thing. And right. everyone was super pumped that we were doing this
right.
for Men of the Year. But, you know, it was that extra... It was Colin really saying, like, could this be possible? It wasn't a demand. He was like, is this something that would interest you? It was like, right away, I was like, boom, are you kidding me? This is incredible. And so deservative of Men of the Year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So you've worked with Ava Don and Mizell mm-hmm. and Bruce. Do you look at these photographers like a parent looks at their children? Like, you can't choose one. Like, they're all good for different reasons. Or do you say, you know what? Well, if I'm doing something outdoors, I'm going to go to this guy. If I'm right. doing something that's situational, I'm going to go to this woman.
I think it's the same reason why people come to you for mm-hmm. To be dressed the way you're dressed, because right. you have a signature look that they're interested
right.
in, right?
Right?
So oftentimes, if I mentor a young photographer, a lot of photographers, especially in the beginning, they are very eager to tell you that they can do anything, right? And I was like, I don't want to know that you can do anything. I want to know that you can only
what I need you to do. Right.
Well, no, but I want you to have a signature look.
Right.
I don't care if it's like I take pictures, you know, on soccer fields only, or I only do black and white portraits, mm-hmm. or I only do this. That is going to get you farther than, oh, I can shoot still lives and I can shoot black and white and I can shoot
right.
landscape. Then there's no reason to hire you because you're right. just, right? So,
right.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
That I learned very early on. You have to have a signature. You know, mm-hmm. if you're a creative person, you have to have a signature. Your clothes have a signature. Hopefully mm-hmm. the way I style and creative direct has a signature. And photographers, especially of the caliber of a Testino or a Mizell or mm-hmm. an Avedon, they have a signature that when you think of them and you think of the subject and you think of your idea, which is an editorial idea, it's just, that's magical. We have to get, you know, we have to get Steve Mizell for this, or we have to get Bruce Weber for this.
Right.
You know, we have to... If we're shooting Tom Brady and he's, you know, about to, you know, win his third Super Bowl ring and we want it to be really special and, you know, want to spend a whole day with him, then we're going to, let's take him to Florida and work with Bruce, you know. So
that's amazing.
It's a discussion. Obviously, it's a creative discussion within the magazine. And, mm-hmm. you know, it would be led by Jim Nelson and myself and the photo director. And we would kind of just hash it out. But I was pretty headstrong about who I wanted to work with. And luckily, Jim...
Backs you 100%.
Backs me 100% and really loved great photography, you know. Mm. I think the thing that kind of goes underrated sometimes is the skill set of an editor-in-chief, who their main skill set is to hire the best people for each category. So if Jim Nelson, you know, knows a lot about, you know, topical commentary and knows a lot about politics and he knows a lot about journalism, but maybe he doesn't know a lot about sports, maybe he doesn't know about, a lot about fashion. It's the editor chief's job to hire the best people for that and then learn from those people, and then, you know, it's kind of he sits in the middle and these people are all around him like a satellite, you know. Yeah. So Jim was a fast learner, you know. I remember he spent his first couple months at the magazine in the fashion department. And he's like, I need to know what you guys do back here.
Wow.
And I was, you know, I loved the idea that he really embraced
and wanted to, come down to
make
hands.
It more fashion and wanted to talk directly to the guys, wanted to teach them more and wanted to do a lot of storytelling. So he came back and, you know, nothing, no stone was unturned with Jim. If you said in passing, like, well, you know, that's in the, you know, Fear of God lookbook or whatever, he would be like, wait, what's a lookbook? You know, and then you'd have to show him examples of it.
Right.
And he wanted to learn. So it was a very interesting time because he was a fast learner and he, you know, he was at the magazine for 6 years before. So it was nice to have a contemporary get the job. And also someone who, you know, had great taste and was super smart. And as most editor-in-chiefs and creative directors is always looking for the thing that's not in the room.
Right.
Or the thing that's not up on the wall.
Right.
Have you ever seen the September issue? Mm-hmm. It's not that far from like all the magazines, you know, like the story comes, the pictures come in too early and they sit around too long. They kind of become like, oh yeah, we've got that story, but what don't we have what's coming in, you know? So it's why magazines have to come out every month because the material gets dated.
It gets dated. So, speaking for me specifically, whenever I meet people who I find fascination with or have, like, you know, just been people that I've looked to in pivotal moments of my life, when I actually meet them in person, I always tell them that. So, like, when I met Sidney Poitier, I was like, thank you. And he said, for what? I said, for your contribution. When I met, you know, Dikembe Mutombo, I was like, thank you. He was like, for what? I was like, you know, for just making defense just as important as offense. Like, he made the block shot. Like, he would wave his finger.
Wow.
I'm asking you this. Well, I'm relaying this message to you because you, along with GQ, are responsible for, like, shaping how men dress in the United States. And since the United States is kind of like the beacon a lot of times for, like, what a lot of things become, do you have people who come up to you the same way I came up to Sidney Poitier or Dikembe and say, thank you, Jim, for this, or I appreciate you for that? Like, does that happen in your everyday life? Like, are you at Whole Foods and, you know, somebody just rolls up?
Yeah, it does, actually. And where did it happen recently? I was with a friend of mine and I think we were in Brooklyn, and this guy was just like, came up to me and he was like, this young black kid who had great style and simple style, but really well put together, you know? So my eyes kind of went on, like, you know, I'm always checking out the sneakers and the relationship with the sock and everything. Mm-hmm. And kind of eyes in the back of my head person all the time, almost like too overly observant, too much so sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me and my style and what you've done for American men. And it was kind of like, the person I was with is like, well, that almost sounded like a sign off in a way. And I said, no, it actually happens more than you think. And it'll happen. It'll happen in a cosmopolitan situation. So it will happen if I'm at the Westfield Mall over here, or it'll happen if I'm in Brooklyn, or it'll happen like, because it'll happen wherever stylish guys are. And I think maybe something that he was talking about is the idea that, you know, American men are, or men in general in America, have an insecurity about style, you know, and I think that's
from young. Absolutely.
And I don't know, I mean, your wife is so beautiful and so stylish, and you are so handsome and so stylish. I feel you were like born with this gift, right? Whether you were or not. But I think most guys, they want it, but they don't know how to get it. But if they get the compliment, if they wear that olive green, which looks beautiful with their eyes or their skin tone or what they're wearing,
it opens them
they
up.
They get a compliment that opens them up. It gives them confidence. Right. So if you keep feeding them that and you keep telling them in an authentic way that this is the color you should be wearing, this is the cut of jean you should be wearing, you should never wear, you know, ripped jeans to the office or whatever it is, then you're a confidence builder, right? You're not, you're an image maker, yes, with celebrities and athletes, but you're a confidence builder to the average guy. And you can be all that at once. And you know, men don't naturally have the chip that a lot of women do. Not to separate men and women, but a lot of women, you know, they know how to go to Prada and then go to Zara and then go to Target and mix it all up and it looks great, right? Absolutely. And they just, and men are just like
creatures of habit.
Yeah. So if you tell him this, if you tell a guy, this is the suit you should wear, this is the brand you should wear because the button stance is perfect on you, the lapel is great, the shoulders fit you up, they'll put down their plastic and go deep.
Correct.
Right? Within, they're loyal. They're actually loyal consumers.
Hyper loyal.
They'll actually spend more money than women. But it's like they need someone
to push.
To push.
And you're that.
Yeah, and I think that I think it's changed a lot. I think there's a lot of guys that we can thank designers like Virgil. We can thank a lot of
Ralph.
We can thank Ralph. We can thank Tom Ford. We can thank all those people because they're aspirational, right? And they're also you know, guys will, they'll want to have that look, but they don't know quite how to do it. So I try to go out of my way, even if no one calls me out for a video they might have seen or whatever. If I see someone doing something right, I always go up to them and tell them. I was like, those shoes are great. If I'm in a store and they're debating whether they should get that camel coat or not, camel coat looks great on you.
Absolutely.
Go for a size up, it'll look cooler, you know, whatever. And they'll, and all of a sudden they like, they stand in front of the mirror a little bit taller, you know, because someone complimented them on it.
And absolutely.
That, and that's the deal breaker with a lot of guys. But I think because of streetwear and I think because of the fact that sky's the limit a little bit. It's a good thing and a bad thing. But I think I think a lot of younger people have a little bit more innate style than because the rules have been.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludicrous.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Broken or abolished.
Absolutely.
And, you know, but I'm still happy when I read in the Business of Fashion that, you know, suits are doing well, but they're being worn in a different way or whatever.
Right, right.
No one's saying that we need to go back to suits and ties and tie bars because that was an era. But the fact that, you know, there's nothing better than a kind of piece of tailored clothing. And tailored clothing can be what you're wearing, which is a beautiful kimono jacket. It can be a military jacket like I'm wearing. It doesn't have to be a three-piece suit.
But
To have a little bit of structure is something that I think always looks good on a guy.
Absolutely. So growing up reading a magazine, I would never, like, it was very rare that I would see a black designer featured in the pages. I mean, like, the Ozzie Smith cover, I remember that. Yep. Like, I remember the Jordan cover, that picture of him holding the ball, I mean, vividly. So, like, when I was able to meet with you, I believe we met in 2000, maybe 5 or 6. Like, it was like stepping into the empire for real, because like I just hadn't, like, I'm from Pasadena, I mean, like, this little small town. Like, to be meeting with you in New York at the Condé Nast office was just like amazing. My question to you is, at what?
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What point in those rooms that you were in did you all say, you know what, we have to make, or I guess the better question is, was it a concerted effort to say, you know what, this landscape is more than Anglo. We got to like include some other designers and tell different points of view. And was MAG a result of that? Or was that something that had already been brewing in those rooms prior to MAG even getting there? Mark Anthony Green.
I think there was a lack of African-American designers. I don't think we had set our sights strongly enough on finding them, but it's like, I feel, so anyways, I have this mentorship that I've told you about that, I do.
Absolutely.
With Rachel.
Yes.
And the thing that amazed me, because I'm constantly blown away by how inventive and how authentic the designers are that we mentor. And some of them are photographers, some are creative directors, some of them are stylists.
Right.
But if I just talk about the designers for a minute, a lot of them are not just out of the box, you know. They haven't gotten that break. It's amazing when you, do you know Rich Fresh?
Of course.
So I've known him forever when he was just, you know, buying everything with credit cards and not like, you know, being able to make it. He had something so authentic that I was like, this story has to be told.
Right.
Or, you know, Prep Curry or... my guy, Mike Paul up in Toronto that does beautiful clothing. And,
yes.
you know, these guys have been held back for so long that a lot of them have been doing it for a long time. They weren't given the break on season one or season two.
Correct.
And that in a way I think is, yes, that's definitely our bad in a lot of ways, but in a way I think the whole industry has to kind of be accountable for it, for not like putting a marginalized community front and center, because the creativity and the things I'm seeing are just, it's mind blowing. And I don't know if you know Prep Curry's story about him going to a Banana Republic party and saying, meeting the CEO and saying, I should be doing a collection for you, you know?
Yes.
And I try to encourage people and tell that story all the time when I'm talking to Black designers, people of color, Asian designers, females, you know, be bold, you know, be bold.
Absolutely.
And be fearless. And, you know, the fact that you never felt like you could be is heartbreaking. You know, it's like, sometimes I get very emotional a lot about this mentoring program, because I realize that someone who has been struggling a lot longer than their white counterpart. And that is very disturbing.
Absolutely.
It's very disturbing. To someone who, you know, I pride myself on going to every trade show, looking under every rock for every
trend or designs or whatever. Absolutely.
That's what I love to do. And people ask me all the time, like, why are you still going to the trade shows? Or why are you doing this? It's like, well, that's what we do, you know? It's
absolutely.
Like, because it's not, yes, we love the Ralphs and the Calvins of the world, but it's like, it's, you know, the next generation,
it's a bigger world out there,
is a bigger world. So thankfully things are changing, and anything I can do to help, I'm on board.
Absolutely. So there is a specific way that GQ has shot, and it has a lot to do with the jump and capturing
the
model.
Okay.
Like, you know, the models are jumping and then you all catch them in midair. Like, what is the genesis of shooting like that versus, like, you know, just your regular run of the mill? Like whose idea was it? Like, you know, let's capture these models and these clothes in action. Is that something that you birthed, or like, where did that come from?
You talking about basketball players? Or are you talking about?
No, just any models. Like, there are so many. Well, I want to share something with you. When I started doing my collection in 2002.
Okay.
2002. I had these books.
2002.
These books. So if you look right behind you, all those folders there.
Yes.
They're full of these.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's, I mean, like.
This goes back to 2002?
This goes back to, back to 2002. And it's just all of these different things that I would see in all these magazines. predominantly GQ.
Yeah.
And it would always be, you know, like I had them separated on purpose. So I knew specifically, like, you know, how I wanted to style my, my sweaters.
Right.
What to wear with my, you know, my khakis or whatever, like, all, like,
was this for your personal style specifically or as a designer?
So literally it started as my own personal Bible.
Okay.
But then as I started to design, I was like, you know what? If I want motivation on, you know, what a motorcycle jacket should look like, what those basic elements are, like I had to separate them. So like in my apartment was maybe like 500 square feet, but I would buy all these magazines. And I would literally cut all these things out, and I would have like these are the jackets, these are the pants, these are the socks, these are the hats, and I would do this. And from this,
it's a magazine; it's its own magazine.
Yeah,
look at this.
From this birthed, you know, War Air. But all of this is like literally the genesis of like me going through your work, and so there will be, you know, what 10 jeans to buy. But it would be a man like jumped up in the air and he's like suspended midair. Mm-hmm. And like that was something that I wasn't seeing in all these other magazines. It was something I was only seeing in GQ.
Right.
So I wanted to know, like, did you all intentionally do this? Or like, was it just like, oh, it was like, you know, the model jumped and you all caught it and like saw it and was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you probably heard the term very GQ, right?
Very
that's
GQ.
That's something I coined many years ago. And I think consciously, unconsciously, I think, you know, when you are, you know, there's a certain look to Vogue, you know, there's a certain look to GQ. Mm-hmm. And, you know, during my time that I was there, well, let me tell you, there's a very high level executive at Condé Nast who I showed my book to very first, probably guess who it is. And this person looked through my book and really responded to the joy in the book.
Hmm. Right.
And hadn't remembered seeing so much joy. And it was kind of, there was a little bit of an epiphany with this person saying that this is what really sets GQ apart. This is what makes it very GQ. Right. And, you know, the buck stops here with me because I am a stickler, a little bit of a barracuda for, you know, whether it was chrome film or standing in front of the monitor is, you know, pushing the photographer to get the image that I felt was right for the magazine.
Right.
Giving them a long leash so they could do what they did. But, you know, lots of communication. And, you know, if the photographer is like, well, we've been shooting hundreds of images, we must have it. I'll be like, I haven't gotten goosebumps yet. I haven't seen the frame. Keep shooting.
Keep getting it.
Yeah.
Right.
So I won't give up. I'm a stubborn tourist, so I'm not going to give up until I see that cover. I'm not going to give up until I see that. You know, if anything, you know, talk to a celebrity, they might be a little bit exhausted after one of my shoots because I'm like, let's try a different outfit for the cover. And let's bring back three great covers. And,
right.
You know, I think that's just kind of what we did. But I think, you know, joy can be corny. So it's like that moment when joy looks cool or joy looks chic,
right,
or it achieves what we're trying to do, because we don't want, you know, five guys across the street just standing there looking blue steel.
Right.
That's the moment that I love. And, you know, there's a lot of Peggy Sirota in this book who I worked with for, you know, 25 years. And I kept going back to her for certain celebrities that I thought needed to be poked a little bit.
Wow.
Or wow. Celebrities that I knew, like The Rock, who had an inner child that we could have fun with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for that joy. We're always looking for, whether it be a cover or a fashion story. You know, I remember Jim Nelson said it best once, in the very beginning when he came aboard, I was like, what are you looking for in a cover? And I don't think I ever asked him that question again. I just knew, you know, what to bring home. He said, I just want the person to look like they want to be there. And I want presence, and I want intent. And I also, in those days, newsstand sales were very important. So you wanted to create an image that really popped off the newsstand.
You got it.
Now it doesn't matter. You can shoot someone from behind or out of focus or whatever, because newsstands don't matter, right?
Exactly.
The caliber of celebrity matters, and your digital numbers are more important than your print numbers. But in those days, it was you know, they had to have that, you know, I had to.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Love the picture. Jim had to love the picture. We had, the guy had to, or the girl had to, feel like they're having a good time on that cover.
Absolutely.
And that was part of the joy. That was part of the lifestyle. You know, it was at the end of the day, you know, Ralph Lauren invented that term lifestyle, you know, back in the 70s when he started, in the 80s when he did his campaigns, were less about the clothes. They were more about, you know,
the world.
The world.
The
right?
world that I'm showing you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, whether it was, you know, Tyson Beckford, you know, just leaning against a green wall, but you knew he was at a tennis court, right? Or a family, you know, mm-hmm. sprawled out on wicker furniture, whatever mm-hmm. it was. And I think, you know, that's what Bruce kind of brought to GQ in the early days, brought this idea of lifestyle, that it's not so much about like a close-up on the white shirt. It's more about like, let's put that white shirt in a place where it's really going to look
absolutely
its best.
And
speaking of that, and I think I mentioned in the book, photographer Bruce Weber specifically was someone who very early on taught me the trick that, you know, dress the model or dress the celebrity a little bit early, even have them horse around a little bit in the clothes to become their own.
Mm-hmm.
Let the wrinkles become
like the white shirt was not just the white shirt. Yeah, let to drag it a little bit.
Let the clothes be, you know, part of the storytelling, and make sure the person looks like they're, you know, make sure the guy doesn't look like he's wearing this. The suit's wearing him, right?
Right.
And a lot of times we would, especially if we were doing things that were more active, like if we were doing a soccer story or if we were doing something that was a little bit more playful, mm-hmm. we would get them dressed a little bit early and have them horse around and then, you know, and then start taking pictures.
Wow.
That was part of the kind of lifestyle. And then when Jim came on board, Art kind of did away a little. He didn't do away with the lifestyle. Art was more about, Art loved movies. So mm-hmm. there were a lot of reenactments of like.
Very cinematic tone.
Very cinematic. Absolutely. Like, let's reenact, you know, these scenes from a Woody Allen movie, right. you know, or mm-hmm. Casablanca, right. Or, mm-hmm. or North by Northwest, or he loved Cary Grant. And that was, at that time, that was a very cool thing to do, right? And then mm-hmm. there was a moment that didn't become, you know, Jim Nelson came in and said, like, you're explaining this white shirt like it's the best white shirt in the world. So let's put this white shirt on a pedestal and take a really beautiful picture of it. And then do call outs and say,
this
you
is
know,
what makes it.
This is what makes it. Pearl button, single needle tailoring, whatever it is, the collar is a certain height. He was like, let's get nerdy
the details,
about this. Yeah.
The academics of,
exactly.
of the garment. When I was 6'5". Mm-hmm. And couldn't find any clothes. And this is before fast fashion. You know, it was very difficult for me socially and professionally to just be comfortable because I was so tall and I was gaunt and I was just like, I was just growing at an abnormal rate.
Right.
But once I started to make stuff for myself that fit me perfectly, there was a higher frequency that I was on.
Yes.
Because I knew that I was presentable.
Yes.
So then it made it easy to then talk to whoever I want to talk to.
Yes.
Male or female.
Yes.
Do you feel that there is a true organic spiritual connection with clothing and the spirit when you look good?
Yes. I don't think a lot of times guys know how to tap into that.
Hmm.
But they, I'll circle back to, you know, sorry for simplifying this so much, but I'll circle back to like the way you feel when you look really great and the compliments you get.
Right.
I always tell people sometimes it's the outfit that you throw on to run errands on a Saturday.
That's really
and
killer.
Sometimes it's like, hey, I just threw this together because I had to right. put some clothes on. And,
right.
You know? So there's kind of that. Or it's like, you know what, this is a special occasion. I am gonna get this suit made for me. Or I am going to spend a little extra money, or I'm gonna buy this bag is probably a couple hundred dollars more than I should spend. But mm-hmm. boy, everybody is complimenting me on it. And that, I think that is in itself where fashion really does its job. You know, yeah, when it gives you excitement, but also you can integrate it into your life and you can start to develop your own personal style.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been designing clothes?
Since 2002. So I'm 20 years.
2002. Okay.
20 years.
And did it start, was it organic like that? It started from the fact that you didn't have anything to wear?
It was literally, I mean, just very truly organic. I worked at United Talent and the writing was on the wall because all the people who were in those training programs, predominantly from the Midwest and the East, mm-hmm. a lot of them went to Ivy League schools. If they weren't Ivy League schools, they were just, you know, highly touted institutions.
Right.
So me showing up, and I'm a graduate of CSUN from a family rich in love, not necessarily finance, is like that gets me through the door. That's fine. But now there's that world, but then there's a world of how do you look because you're client facing, right? You're dealing with mm-hmm. actors, you're dealing with below the line people, mm-hmm. you're dealing with studios, you're dealing with all of these people. So what is your uniform? So I mentioned earlier in our interview, Lou Wasserman. Just knowing his story and how he crafted that uniform.
Yes.
Like, I didn't know that he had crafted that uniform when I was working in the agency world. And so, like, to actually see that and then remember, okay, oh, Jeremy Zimmer, he only wore suits. Nick Stevens, mm-hmm. like, he, like, looked more like Jim Nelson did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just all started to make sense. So I was, like, you know, minority reporting all of this stuff, like, in real time.
Right.
So me having, like, I didn't stop growing until I was 29. So it was by 29, for the most part, back in those days, you had to know that you were, like, close to your destination.
Yes.
Professionally by then. And I didn't know until, like, I left UTA, went and worked at Amon-Ra Films with Wesley Snipes, and we had a studio deal that expired with Disney, and we all got these severance packages.
Yeah.
And from that severance package, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my sister and my mother were like, you need to find something that you like to do that you can get paid at. But I didn't know anybody in the fashion industry.
Right.
No one. So I was literally downtown, walking into all these buildings, going up and downstairs, just like looking to meet somebody who could actually put something together that would fit me.
Right.
Right. So like now, like when I was younger, I would see like NBA clips of like guys who like, well, let's take it away from basketball for a second. Like a guy like Kurt Flood, what he did for free agency.
Mm-hmm.
If Kurt Flood told, any of the baseball players that get paid $625 million, what his sacrifice was, they may not necessarily like understand his sacrifice.
Right.
But like when I tell people who are like my height, how difficult my process was when I first started, they don't understand it. But when I got something that fit me, it just took things to a completely different level. Then I went back to UTA. I went back to all these places that I was employed at, and I started doing stuff for like people of any height. And I make a shirt, then I make a jacket, then I make a pant.
Right.
And I was making a whole wardrobe for them.
Hey, everyone. It's Jalen here from the Black Wealth Renaissance podcast. If you're a fan of business podcasts, then be sure to check out and subscribe to the Black Wealth Renaissance podcast, a show that covers business, career development, and tips to increase your income. And the best part, it's brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip hop, powered by creators.
Then they would introduce me to Ashton Kutcher. They would introduce me to Leo DiCaprio. They would introduce me to Will Smith. They would introduce me to that's how it grew.
How it grew
in the athletic space was I was doing stuff for this guy named John Sally and Steve Smith. Then I started doing stuff for Mari Stoudemire, and that's when I met Rachel. And then Rachel was like, I mean, at that time, Rachel had literally, like, she single-handedly, like, masterminded the new era of, like, post the Malice in the Palace, the fight that happened in Detroit with Ron Artest and Ben Wallace.
Right.
When Commissioner David Stern said, that's it. No more long T-shirts, these cornrows, that's it.
Yeah.
Rachel was just at the perfect point because she dressed LeBron and made LeBron like, you know, that style guy that GQ came and covered. I don't know how many covers he's been on since then.
Yeah.
But She was like the impetus of all that happening. And it's just very interesting.
Yeah, and she came in at that moment when, you know, I remember who is Michael Jordan's coach again?
Phil Jackson.
Before that.
Doug Collins?
He was the one who told Michael to wear suits. And then everybody, all basketball players wanted to look like Mike.
Wow. Right?
So they want to go to the same tailor as Michael. And then after a while, it's like, oh no, I'm going to find my tailor in my own city.
Region. Yeah.
And then, you know, right before Rachel steps in and GQ starts stepping in and the locker room becomes the fashion gauntlet, right?
Absolutely.
Suddenly it's like, wait, I don't want to look like Michael Jordan and I don't want to wear suits like Michael Jordan. I want to look like myself,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
And I want to go to the fashion shows and I want to wear, you know. So then that's when it kind of really exploded. And people always say to me, like, who are the most fun people to shoot? And it's always basketball players, because football players too, but it's like basketball players are just like, they don't want to talk about 3-point lead from last night's game. They can care less. They have enough people asking about that. They want to see me and they want to look at the clothes and they want to try everything on.
Right.
And it's just like.
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know, kids in the candy store. It's my favorite moment is to shoot basketball players because they get so excited. And I'm not trying to stereotypify all basketball players love fashion, but for the most part, I think if you look at the trajectory, it started really with that coach and Michael Jordan. And grown from there. I love hearing your story and of how you became a fashion designer, because I never knew that was your trajectory.
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful thing.
My ultimate question for you is, you know, being a man who's accomplished so much and, you know, I mean, just like a blink of an eye, what makes you excited now? Terms of profession, like, you know, what are those next things that people may not know about that they should know about?
One of my favorite things is to sit in a meeting with a bunch of corporate people from big businesses and tell them something that I think is very obvious but they haven't thought of.
Wow.
Which is why are our women's sales so great and our men's sales are not?
Right.
And that's my favorite place to be. I would love, you know, just put me in that situation and I can talk about it forever, as you can tell. But also I like to be really actionable, and I've been able to make some difference with companies, big differences. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens a lot of times, and if it's a European-based company, even more, they don't understand the American male. And they put them in the same hopper as the American female customer, right? Or they put them in the same hopper as the European and Asian and, you know, Arab customer. And that becomes the problem, because your men's sales are off in America because you're not teaching them anything. Mm-hmm. You're not merchandising for them, and you're not, for lack of a better term, holding their hand, you know, and showing them how to do it.
Right.
You're just kind of putting the stuff on shelves and, you know, expecting them to shop like the women shop on this side of the store.
Yes.
And of course it's always going to fail unless Correct. You just give them a little bit of help and encouragement.
Right. Wanted to ask you about, I mean, just something on a more spiritual level. What brings you the most joy?
What makes me the most happy? I have to say that the pandemic was a very interesting time for me, because I am a go person, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really, I'm not a very relaxed person. I don't spend a lot of time relaxing. I have a house on the desert,
right,
and I use it occasionally, but not a lot. And during the pandemic, I would go for these really long walks, right? And as soon as the sun would go behind the mountain in Palm Springs, I would take these 2-hour long walks. Mm-hmm. And it was just by myself. And, you know, my partner is into meditation, spirituality. I was never someone to meditate. I don't take my phone with me. I don't put headphones on or anything. And I just, and that's my meditation, you know. So, and I, for the first time, I never knew a cactus bloomed, or, you know, I never saw the colors in the mountains or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the fact that my eyes were open to something that I had never seen before was really inspiring to me. So now these walks have become very important to me. And, you know, where during the pandemic, I was in a very meditative state because the world was kind of all in chaos. Now those walks I use for like my think tank, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's when the ideas come to me. So it's like, wow. I like being, I'm comfortable being very social and being very quiet as well. And I think that the pandemic was something, I didn't know if I could do it. You know, I didn't know if I could spend that much time kind of mm-hmm. alone. I was lucky enough to be out in the desert. So that was great. But I think it's just getting up and looking at each day as like something different and never pegging things, you know,
absolutely.
Never saying like, oh, I'm going to do this shoot and I know exactly how it's going to play out. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to get out of bed and be that person. You know, I want to be the person who's like, you know, how can we make this the best it can be? Or how can I disrupt that situation a little bit more?
Absolutely.
Like, I know we're all set on that color background and whatever. It's probably going to look good, but it's like, if you just move the model to that wall, I think it's going to look better. So for me, it's always being up for the creative challenge and just being awake as a human and letting things come to you.
Absolutely.
And realizing the power of that
absolutely.
It's all coming to you constantly. You're just, a lot of times you're letting it bounce off of you or you're not accepting it. So
absolutely.
And just being grateful for a beautiful life.
In your book, you have a interview between you and Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
What is the benefit that you feel he's brought to fashion?
I mean, listen, I'm not a fanboy of anybody. I never have been.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but I just, you know, probably the closest I ever got to it was shooting President Obama, you know, that was
incredible.
And I got to shoot him twice. You know, I got to shoot him
yeah.
when he went into office and when he left office. And
right.
it was an incredible moment. And I'm not saying I don't have a lot of goosebump moments, but for me, Kanye is my friend and he is above all my friend, but I see him as the most creative person that I've ever met. And I feel like when I'm around him, I just open myself to all the possibilities. So we have these really long conversations about, you know, how, you know, why should plastic plates just be for children or something like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll talk about it. But I can go really deep. I have a pretty long attention span and he is incredible because he is a incredible listener. He is mm-hmm. He is dedicated to his friends and the people that he loves. Obviously he likes people who are, you know, top of their field, but more than that, he's very kind. He's very compassionate. He'll never forget something you told him. He often writes things down
mm-hmm.
and he is a true creative because he's not just a disruptor. He's not just looking at how to change things. He's a fully honest human being. And that's
yeah.
where the misinterpretation comes from.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh, he's this. No, he's that. No, you're actually judging him. It's like, he's being who he is.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And he's kind of a poster boy for that. It's just people can't, that's too hard for them to
absolutely
believe, you know? So, sorry, I could go on a rant about how much I love Kanye.
Yeah.
But, he is, he's the most creative person I know. And when you're with him, anything is possible, you know? I find sometimes that our matchup is good because I can, when I worked on Yeezy with him, we could, Gap Yeezy, I could kind of, you know, if he has 1700 things, I can say like, well, let's pick these 20. I can help him with that, you know?
Right.
And you know, he's really good at that. He really listens and he really puts people around him who help him with that.
So, absolutely.
But he's absolutely incredible.
And in reference to all of the covers, is there any cover that stands or any like celebrity? I know you mentioned Obama, but like, you know, you've had everyone on the cover. I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is there anyone that you were like, oh my God, I can't believe like I'm here at this very moment in time?
Yeah, I can tell you. It's funny, no one put it like that, but as soon as you said that, I got a vision. So I was shooting Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman for Rain Man.
Mm-hmm.
Were you even born when Rain Man?
Yeah, I was. I was like 11.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so it's with Herb Ritz, a legendary photographer. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
And we were shooting it in a very simple Herb way. It was just like a white background and very bright strobe. And we had the idea was to just put them both on the cover for this movie that was coming out. That you know, that's the other thing. It's like, we see the movies before anybody else, and then we kind of judge whether they're going to be hits or not. So we saw this as a big hit. So they're both in tuxedos, and Tom Cruise was my second. No, it was my first Tom Cruise cover, and did seven. We shot him seven times for the cover. So it was my first of seven covers. And I remember I was tying his bow tie, and I was thinking, like, I'm tying the bow tie on Tom Cruise. And how cool is that? And cut to Obama, that happened again. And,
amazing.
You know, the Obama story is just incredible because I didn't necessarily like what he was wearing, so he agreed to change. But you can't really dress the president, you know, but you can but you can say, what else do you have, right?
In how many so years many do you words. Have here? 4 decades? Well, I mean,
but he trumps me, you know, a million times. But he's just the swagger and the joy and the charisma and the power coming off that man, just incredible.
Incredible. Brother, I want to thank you for being here and taking time coming up in Palm Springs to just sit here and just share thoughts with me on Measurables. Thank you very much.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
brother. The honor was mine.
You got it.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah. Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.